Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio. Theatre, film, TV and more. Susie Rong reviews it all on Joy Drive.
Good afternoon, Susie Rong.
Hello, Warren. It's so lovely to join you on this special Tuesday as you celebrate the 30th anniversary of the movie The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Did you love it?
I wouldn't be in Australia, I don't think, if not for that movie. So
really?
It's a very important film to me.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, 1994. I was 21 years old in Singapore and somehow was able to see this movie. And I just saw, like, my future. I just saw a place somewhere far away where trans and gay people were able to live freely. And I thought, you know what? I'm getting out of here.
Susie, I just got goosebumps as you said that. That's really interesting to hear it from the, you know, from the impact it had on someone in a different country and how you moved here. Well, that's amazing. What was your favourite track from it?
You know, when I think of that movie, I think Finally, because of that sequence of the great drag outfits. But, you know, all the songs I remember clearly. I had that CD and, you know, so many people had those CDs and we would play it to death. It was a great education in sort of gay disco music. And it was great to have it all on one disc. And it's so lovely that you're playing them all today. Yeah. And, you know, the impact of film and TV is so great. You know, sometimes we think of these things as just simple entertainment, but really these modes of storytelling are so important.
I agree. And that's what I love, because you bring us a new one every week. I remember seeing it and I had some, I got invited to a party and it was a straight party. And I remember going there and I was a little bit, you know, when you're a little bit nervous sometimes, thinking, oh, I only know one person here and I've been invited. What are they going to be like? And they were all playing the soundtrack to Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and dancing their heads off. And it was great. And I remember thinking, wow, this has really had an impact on absolutely everyone.
Yeah, I think it probably was able to let more straight people kind of understand where we were coming from and also give them kind of the license to be accepting, you know, because I think a lot of social coding at that time was to be rejecting us. So someone needed to lead the way to say that, no, we might not be gay people, we might not be trans people, but we want to be accepting. And there was, I think in the early 90s, we saw a new kind of wave of acceptance, but that required, you know, things to lead. And Priscilla, I think, was one of the things that set an example.
How was
it
received?
You know, in today's show, how was it received in Singapore?
Yeah, how was it received in Singapore?
I don't know how it was received widely. Yeah. I guess because it was such a sort of a fringe and sort of a niche thing. And we, at that stage, we only had very recently allowed a new kind of, what's it called? You know, grading, like, you know, R and all that.
Like,
you know, in Australia, you had G and PG and a rating, for the longest time. And it was only in the, around the 90 or maybe early 90s that they introduced a rating for R for 21 years. You had to be 21 years old to be able to see Priscilla at
21?
That time.
Really?
So it wasn't sort of, yes, it was so taboo. But because of this new rating system, it allowed that film to go into that country. And so queer people began to be able to see ourselves at that time. So it wasn't like a mainstream success, I don't think, because, you know, most people weren't able, a lot of people won't be able to see it because, you know, people watch movies with families and stuff. So this was a strictly adults only affair.
I wonder if the rating system in giving it that rating of 21 or over to see it also made it a little bit sort of taboo and kids thought, I must see it, and they got copies of it.
Probably. Yeah, I think queer kids might have been able to hear about it because I remember it was quite a high profile sort of film. I took part in like a lucky draw thing because I bought the tickets, and with the ticket stub, I entered a lucky draw, and would you believe it? I won a holiday and all expenses holiday.
Where to?
To this like, I think it's Bintan, which is an Indonesian island. It was the best day. I think it was half a week. Very, very upmarket and was all expensive. So Priscilla is very important to me.
That was the universe saying, Susie, this is going to be a significant film for you.
It really is. Like, looking back, it really is. And hopefully White Fever is important to some people. I think it is.
Definitely. We are talking about White Fever. You can stream it now on ABC iView. Susie, give us your review.
Jane is a young woman living in Melbourne who has a thing for hirsute men. This probably explains why she's only ever been with white guys. But because Jane is of Korean heritage, it would be understandable that anyone would think that there is something strange about her not being attracted to someone else who might be Asian. In the new comedy series White Fever on ABC iView, we discover that Jane was adopted as a small girl by white Australian parents. So it doesn't take a great stretch of the imagination to think that there is something racial at play that relates to her self-image as much as it is about her sexual proclivities. And when it is pointed out to her in the first episode that she's never dated men from her own background, Jane has to confront the possibility of internal racism. Does she not have time for Asian men because she has a problem with being Asian herself? This is a very big question, and it is entirely admirable that series creator and star Ra Chapman has found a way to discuss the important issue in the guise of a raunchy sex comedy. White Fever is on the surface very playful and irreverent, but its explorations about identity for ethnic minorities in Australia go deep and meaningful. It poses difficult questions and does not provide easy answers for them. The comedy is charming. I love seeing young women behaving in sexually liberated ways, but I must say it wasn't laugh out loud funny for me. The political dimensions I find to be much more interesting, although I have to be honest and say that I had personally figured out these same conundrums over the years, so none of this is new to me. To have it put on film, though, and made available nationwide is without doubt highly valuable to so many of us minorities. White Fever is directed really well, and performances are very strong. It might look at first like a silly piece of entertainment, but there is such a high quality of talent and skill being showcased here, and I'd recommend everyone to check it out. Warren, you suggested we talk about this series, so I expect that you'd have lots to say about the themes.
Susie, it's interesting because when I watched it, a new comedy on ABC, and I didn't see it as a comedy at all. I didn't get the laugh out louds. There were a few sort of funny moments to it, but I found it really difficult to watch, but not difficult to watch because of lack of quality or anything like that. I found it really difficult to watch the racism that goes on and, you know, seeing these families and what they do, thinking that they're helping someone that they've adopted from another country, but watching it was cringeworthy, the behaviour. And I know that it was possibly, for some, it was a bit extreme compared to some of the racism, but honestly, like throwing eggs at a Chinese restaurant, just the comments coming from the father's mouth, I found it difficult to watch and quite confronting, to be honest, because I know that goes on. And I know that's what Australia was like in the, you know, the 80s and the 70s, and you know, and I'm sure it still goes on today, although we may not necessarily be exposed to it as much. I found it difficult to watch for that reason, Susie.
I agree. I did think that some of it is hard to watch. It's trying to say some very important things, some things that we've always found it really hard to say as Australians. And as a result, I think it does feel hard to watch. It's trying to package it up in like a, you know, 30-minute sitcom format. But I think it's not really very funny because some of it is just too serious. And but I hope people do tune in because these are really important discussions. You know, I think white Australians would find it eye-opening to see that Asian Australians do wrestle with the similar questions. You know, like we find it hard sometimes to fit in and to be considered normal Australians, quote unquote, but also we find it hard to see ourselves inappropriate ways as Asian Australians. It's a really tricky thing to kind of navigate. And it's really great that that so much effort, like ABC has invested money and, you know, to be able to bring us this really interesting bit of storytelling. I think it's on some levels incredibly sophisticated. But it is challenging, and I understand why you're saying that it was hard to watch, because I found it hard to watch at times.
I feel like maybe it shouldn't have been a comedy. Maybe it's almost like it's such a serious thing we need to talk about, we need to watch, we need to discuss the comedy, and the comedy wasn't strong. It sort of watered it down a little bit. But Susie, I'd never heard of the term white fever before. I remember an ex of mine was Chinese Malaysian, and we were out one day, and someone said, "Oh, Warren's got yellow fever." And I'd never heard of that until that time. I was like, "What do you mean? What's that? What's yellow fever?" And he said, "Oh, because you've got an Asian boyfriend." I went, "What?" I didn't understand it. And I didn't know there was also a white fever. Is it something that you've come across before?
I originally heard about it, I think, wasn't it a Spike Lee film called Jungle Fever? And then soon after that, when I moved countries and came here, there was a lot of sensitivity within the queer community. If you're Asian and you would only date exclusively white guys, and there'll be white guys hanging around that would date exclusively Asian guys. And that was a really strange thing. And you know, I guess in some ways it's still a strange thing that people would date exclusively, you know, based on race. But what white fever is showing that, is that, you know, and this happens like with heterosexual people as well. Like I've got friends who might be Asian women, and they talk about, you know, precisely what Jane is going through, of friends that only date white guys, and or they themselves, being more comfortable, dating white guys. So I guess this is an important thing. Jane is experiencing this thing where she's confronted to think that, you know, are my sexual tastes a reflection of who I think about myself, which is obviously the more important decision, you know? The jokey thing is like, you know, the hairy guys that she likes. But the serious thing is she not accepting of her Asianness because she's brought up by white people who, you know, were full of intention but didn't understand being Asian, and she's never had kind of that sort of bringing up in the right in those ways of like of an Asian family, and did she, you know, inadvertently become a racist towards herself? And I do think that it deals with it very sensitively and very cleverly. I love that she never found kind of easy answers really quickly, but we saw her sort of going through different ways of struggling with, wrestling with, coming to terms with this idea and how she's trying to fix the problem. I think for a lot of Asian Australians, we experience the same. I think it is a thing at the current moment where we are trying to decipher, you know, what it is, what is it to be normal and what is it to be white? It's not the same thing, you know, and to understand that sometimes we kind of tie the two together in this country when we think that, oh, normal behavior, this is normal, that is normal, and then sometimes you think, oh, you know, maybe that is just a white people thing, is a white culture thing, that maybe our culture might have a different approach to these things. So it is a very timely matter that the series is going into these themes.
One of the things that I found quite confronting was might have been the last episode where, you know, the father's getting offended because she's potentially going back to her country of birth, Korea, and South Korea, and talking about the meat and whether Aussie beef is better than Korean beef. And I just thought to myself, I can understand why people go off people when you see that sort of behavior, and then, you know, you find them unattractive because of what comes out of their mouth.
It is so great that the father character, we see a big part of his character as being a very loving and a great father. It's so important to see that and then see him say these incredibly racist things and understand that it is not about a person's intentions sometimes. I think in this country, well, anywhere really, we are so used to linking a person's intentions when it comes to racism. You know, it's so important to understand that sometimes it's not about a person's intentions. Sometimes a person can have the best intentions and make, you know, make bad mistakes, you know, and if we can find a way to be able to deal with that, you know, which means that we can't just kind of be accusing people all the time and kind of accusing people and saying that people need to be canceled or punished, but still be able to look at the mistakes that we make, you know, I think, you know, that will get us to a better place. Because if we distill everything to, oh, but it wasn't my intention, like, if you're offended, that's your problem, you know, we're never going to move.
What do you think about the whole adoption and removing someone from their culture? And I'm not sure what the reason was in this case, but it sounded like, you know, I don't want to spoil the movie, but it sounded like, you know, it wasn't necessarily, you know, a complete amicable adoption. How important is it that when someone is adopted out of a different country as a child, that they still have contact with their culture?
Well, clearly it's important now because times have changed. You know, like 30 years ago, Australia probably felt a lot more monocultural. Like, you know, we were minorities living in a place that we felt like, oh, we need to concede to this white culture. We need to understand that we need to abide by their rules and their ways of doing things. So obviously, if you were children of that time, you were brought up to understand that, oh, you have to adapt and adopt and behave like a white person. But now that these children have grown up, we are in a different culture now where we understand that white culture is not everything, and we are allowed to have our own approaches to things. But then this understanding comes almost, it feels like this understanding comes a bit late for people who never had the opportunity to understand their own respective cultures, which is what Jane is going through, you know, which is why I think it's such a important and difficult thing to discuss, because she never grew up with the knowledge and and you know, all this information about her background. But now it becomes a thing that is expected of her. But how does she access it? Where does she go to access it? This is really, I think this is something that's happening a lot. You know, I've got friends who, you know, who don't know the language that their parents know. Their parents, like, didn't teach them the language because back in the day, you wouldn't do that. You wanted the child to be quote unquote Australian as possible. And then now things have changed. You know, you look at an Asian person, you say, oh, which country are your ancestors from? And you get into a discussion about that. And then you talk about, you know, why you don't know the language, why you don't know the customs. And so this is where we are now culturally.
It's interesting because I wonder whether, you know, hypothetically, once she cures her white fever, whether she will still be attracted to hairy white guys. You know, is the attraction to them as a result of the behavior that she observed as a child, of particularly of her parents and her peers, or is it an intrinsic sort of attraction that she's actually attracted, but she still needed to deal with this, so I suppose, internal racism towards other Asian people? What do you reckon, Susie?
That's so interesting. Like, I feel like my sexual tastes have changed over the years, and it is not just, you know, specific things. It's just generally, I feel like with age, I've just become, I feel like I've become a lot more open. I think with age, I've learned over the years to be able to see people more completely and beyond the surface things. I think that's one thing that, for me, came with maturity. I'm sure some people understand that younger, but when I was younger, I saw only the surface things. I would only be attracted to the surface things. But as I grew older, you know, that I'm able to see clearer and deeper what a person is, who a person is, and then be able to appreciate the person that way. So, you know, Jane's story is about race, but I think for most people, this sort of sexual maturity and sexual evolution probably has to do with our own maturity in all the different ways.
It's so interesting because I was just thinking then how, you know, if I'm chatting to someone or if I go on a date or what have you, it's happened several, because I mean, I'm quite fit and I work hard at it, but I've had people say, oh, look, I'm not as fit as you, or I'm not muscly like you. Is that going to be okay? And it breaks my heart when they say it, because I think there's more to someone than just the, you know, the state of their physical appearance. And to be honest with you, if someone's muscly, I'm not interested. I think, no, I'm not interested. I put up preconceived ideas about what they're like as a person. I'm interested in what it's like, what the person is. And it breaks my heart when I see gay guys who just think that, you know, we're just into the body and I'm so sorry, I feel a bit lesser because my body's not as good as yours. It's really sad.
Well, this is the thing with the gay community, isn't it? Like being shut out from the idea of family for so many years. We were refused to, as queer people, to have families. So what happens is then sexuality becomes a very, you know, very casual thing for most of us. You know, our experience of sexuality has been, lacking the depth. You know, that in my opinion, you know, this is a very personal opinion, that I think that if you have the concept of longevity, which, you know, which also means that there is an idea of family attached to that. If you haven't got sexuality attached to that longevity, obviously your sexuality is all very transient and it's all very sort of transactional and really surface. And if it's surface, then you can only see the hair and the muscles. There's no need for you to see beyond that, really.
But there are people behind it. And that's what we want to get to. Susie, we are talking about White Fever, which is on ABC iView. We are going to go out with CC Peniston and finally, because that's your favourite track from Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. But first, what are we going to be watching for next week?
Love Lies Bleeding is a twisted romance between two women told in a darkly humorous manner. It stars Kristen Stewart and is available to rent on all the usual digital platforms. The title again of our lesbian film next week is Love Lies Bleeding. So check it out and I'll see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Susie Wrong. So Love Lies Bleeding and today was White Fever. Catch it on ABC iView. Finally, CC Peniston.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.